We see naloxone as kind of a fire extinguisher, right? We hope you never have to use it, but it's great to have just in case.
A pilot program aimed at reducing overdose deaths. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, January 4th. Good evening, I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, the NTSB investigates the Anaktuvuk Pass airplane crash that seriously injured 7 passengers and the pilot.
We're going to look at the winds, we're going to look at the weather, the terrain, the radar environment, and every other aspect of this event.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive education grounded in real-world experience. Through their engaging staff and faculty, APU's education is designed to broaden and deepen their students' potential through action and understanding. Hashtag, this is our classroom. This message sponsored by APU.
The organization that owns a small plane that crashed into 2 downtown Anchorage office buildings says the pilot didn't seek authorization to use the search and rescue aircraft and took it without permission. Civil Air Patrol National Spokeswoman Julie DeBartoleben said that pilot Doug Demarest did not make a request to fly as required by the organization. Demarest was the only person killed when his Cessna 172 clipped a building housing the law firm Dorsey & Whitney on December 29th, then slammed into another building before most area businesses that day had opened. Family spokeswoman Jonna Lindemuth said the death was a suicide. 42-year-old Demarest was flying a plane. 42-year-old Demarest was flying a plane owned by the Civil Air Patrol after taking it from its hangar at Merrill Field, a small airport at the edge of town. The National Transportation Safety Board is investigating the cause of a separate plane crash near Anaktuvuk Pass on Saturday. NTSB air safety investigator Sean Williams says a Cessna 208 operated by Wright Air Service that departed Fairbanks Saturday morning was later reported down about 6 miles from Anaktuvuk Airport.
A little after 1 p.m., NTSB was notified of an aircraft accident. There were 8 people on board, 7 passengers plus the pilot, all sustained serious injuries. There were no fatalities.
Williams says the injured were evacuated to Anchorage hospitals. He says the aircraft will be recovered this week as part of a crash investigation that will look at man, machine, and environment.
By man, we're going to look at the pilot, his 72-hour history, his training. By machine, we're going to look at the aircraft, anything that could have been wrong with the airplane or how it was equipped. And the environment, that's where we're going to look at the winds, we're going to look at the weather, the terrain, the radar environment, and every other aspect of this event.
Williams says the plane was traveling along a river valley at the time of Saturday's accident and that winds were calm and visibility about 6 miles with a 4,000-foot ceiling. A naloxone pilot project at Fred Meyer Pharmacies down south could be expanding to Alaska. 8 stores in Washington have quietly rolled out access to a drug that stops opiate overdoses. The chain plans to eventually expand to all its locations. KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins has more on how, in Alaska, this largely depends on the outcome of a bill in the next legislative session.
Tailing Coffee started using opiates about 7 years ago. She says it started with OxyContin after seeing her boyfriend and a family member become addicted to the drug. Then she switched to heroin when Oxys became harder to find. One night, she was hanging out with her friends in Juneau.
We were all laughing. We're high, of course.
She remembers one of those friends had just finished shooting up, and the girl's lips turned blue. Coffee says they all panicked.
Trying to shake her, trying to get some kind of notion that she was still breathing or alive at this point, and nothing. We got nothing.
She says they were afraid of being arrested if they took the girl to the hospital. Still, they knew they needed to get their friend help. She was overdosing. With the changes happening in Alaska, that night could have gone differently. For starters, the Good Samaritan law passed last year could have protected Coffee and her friends when they called for help. And now Fred Meyer Pharmacies want to make it possible for people to have access to a drug that stops the overdose.
We see naloxone as kind of a fire extinguisher, right? We hope you never have to use it, but it's great to have just in case.
Melissa Hansen is a pharmacy sales manager at Fred Meyer. The naloxone pilot project rolled out in October at some Washington stores, but it's still getting off the ground. Hansen said people wanting to get their hands on the drug don't have to go to a doctor.
So they can just walk into any of our pharmacies and say, I'd like to get some naloxone. and then we can prescribe it to them, even if we know that they're not the end user.
Fred Meyer can't prescribe naloxone, sometimes called Narcan, under their own pharmacy license. So they rely on something called a collaborative drug therapy agreement.
And that allows us to prescribe naloxone under a doctor.
For people who need it, Hansen says this reduces some of the barriers to getting the drug. After a short consultation with a pharmacist, the person is given an injection kit or nasal spray. Medicaid and some insurance providers cover the expense in Washington, and the out-of-pocket cost for the nasal spray is only $40. Hansen thinks naloxone isn't just for heroin users.
The other thing we're really working on is convincing the medical community that they're not having risky prescribing habits, but that these are risky medications.
For example, cancer patients sometimes have to take high doses of opiates for pain. Hansen says it makes sense for them to also have naloxone and someone to administer it nearby. Fred Meyer Pharmacies plan to start advertising the program at their Washington store soon. The program then expands to Idaho in February and later, possibly Alaska. It depends on if the state passes Senate Bill 23 in the spring.
As soon as this law passes in Alaska, that they're already on our radar to go up there.
The law gives protections for people administering naloxone. That night that Taylor and Coffey's friend OD'd, the group got lucky. They were driving the girl to the hospital, performing CPR.
And so halfway through the trip, we were just getting past the intersection from McDonald's, and she came to. That first breath, I can't even tell you how good that made me feel, and everyone else was just so relieved.
That was about 5 years ago. Since then, Coffey has kicked her opiate addiction. She now works for an organization that helps women in domestic violence situations. And she says naloxone isn't going to stop heroin use in Juneau, but it could save lives. If it becomes available at Fred Meyer, she wouldn't hesitate to have some on hand.
Oh, absolutely. I'll be the first in line to buy some. I'm not an addict anymore, but I know tons of people that are still. And if I can help in some way, shape, or form, I'm gonna.
Fred Meyer reps say the program could expand to their 11 pharmacies in Alaska by summer. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
Common mer seabirds are challenging rescue workers as they make their way inland, becoming stranded and hungry. The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports Alaska wildlife troopers have been overwhelmed while the Anchorage nonprofit Bird Treatment and Learning Center is housing between 300 and 350 of the birds. Volunteers have been hand-feeding the birds and re-waterproofing their wings to return to sea. Executive Director Guy Runko called the shift unprecedented as sightings spread north from south-central Alaska. Runko said that whatever is driving the seabirds inland is a mystery. Black and white birds need water to take flight. Runko said to leave common murres found near the water alone, but to try and bring inland birds to the treatment center. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a small community near Homer works to find funding to expand their overcrowded school.
We don't have things like a kitchen or a gym, so a lot of those things that you might expect in a school, we don't have those.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Artists make us think and question. They excite and engage. Artists inspire Alaska. The 2016 Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artists Award Grant Program is now accepting applications. Individual Artist Awards support Alaska artists in 10 creative disciplines at all career stages. The program is open to Alaska residents only. For details and to apply, visit rasmussen.org/IAA. The deadline is March 1st, 2016. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
Around 100 business owners and industry leaders will head to Juneau during the upcoming legislative session as part of the Alaska Chamber of Commerce's annual fly-in to speak with lawmakers about the issues affecting state businesses and the business climate. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
Alaska Chamber President and CEO Curtis Thayer says the participants represent groups from Nome, Anchorage, Ketchikan, and many places in between.
We have banks, shipping companies, insurance companies, people involved, obviously, in oil and gas. Some of the native corporations will be joining us, small businesses. So it's really a cross spectrum. There's not one industry that particularly stands out over the other.
The chamber's priorities for the upcoming session focus on a sustainable state budget, discussions regarding the permanent fund, oil taxes, and what new taxes could look like. Thayer says individual discussions with legislators could cover a wide variety of other issues as well.
But in polling our members, right now the sustainable budget, PFD, and taxes are the most important issues to them. So I think we're pretty much in alignment, but they will go in there and talk about their regions, their individual businesses also.
The Alaska Chamber represents 650 businesses statewide, and Thayer says the group traveling to Juneau will be representative of the larger organization. Thayer says the group's next step will be budgeting time with lawmakers.
We've been very fortunate the majority of the legislature makes appointments for our members, and so we set up those appointments. They go in the groups of three to four, and spread out across the Capitol. If you can imagine with 100 members going up there, it's quite a few appointments to set up.
Thayer says participants will also hear from a variety of speakers, attend a luncheon with state lawmakers, and have a chance to chat with Governor Bill Walker at a reception at the governor's mansion. Thayer says there are about 30 slots left for this year's legislative fly-in, and he is hoping to finalize the roster during the third week of January. The trip will take place February 3rd and 4th. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
The community of Voznesenka wants the Kenai Peninsula School District to pay to lease an additional building for their overcrowded school. But the district says they have a very tight budget this year, and they're not sure if they can do it. KBBI's Daisha Eaton reports.
At the bottom of a steep road, sitting near the head of Kachemak Bay, about a dozen students play tag rugby on a frozen playfield beside Voznesenka School. They holler in a mix of English and Russian. Principal Mike Wojak has worked at the Voznesenka School for 5 years. He says the playfield, which is actually owned by the borough, is used for sports, recess, and more.
Our PE takes place outside. Our construction class takes place outside. We don't have any indoor space, so we do a lot of things outside.
Before coming to Voznesenka, Wojak worked in bush communities in rural Alaska, and he's used to roughing it. But the school in Voz, as it's referred to by locals, has less amenities than most bush schools.
We've only got two places where there are restroom facilities. We don't have any sort of multi-purpose room or large gathering area. We don't have things like a kitchen or a gym. So a lot of those things that you might expect in a school, we don't have those.
The more than 100 children of Voznesenka School are part of the Russian Old Believer community, a group of Russian Orthodox people who came to the United States in the 60s seeking religious freedom, then to Alaska looking for a place to preserve their traditions. Old Believers from Nikolaevsk, north of Homer, broke away and moved to Voznesenka about 30 years ago. There are three villages in the area, Voznesenka, Rozdolna, and Kachemak Selo. Each has their own school. There was no school when the community started, so the locals built one and the district provided teachers. The community likes having local control of their school. For example, they have their own calendar to accommodate their religious holidays. But the students are outgrowing the buildings, say residents. Voznesenka Community Council, Inc., the community nonprofit, recently began building an addition onto their church, but the district is balking at paying for the new space. That's bothering Nazari Basarjan, president of the community nonprofit, which uses the money to maintain the school.
Initially, when we had the school going, we couldn't afford it to build anything bigger than that. But as time went along, we went and tried to get the school district to build us a school, but they wanted to build with a school for all the three head of the Bay communities.
That was about 15 years ago, but Basarjan says at that time, the communities couldn't agree on where the new school should be, so it never got off the ground. All 10 of Basarjan's children attended this school, and two of his grandchildren will soon start. Basarjan says he'd prefer a new school.
We'd like to see the school district build us a school, and for the three communities, and have a full gym, etc.
But Kenai Peninsula Borough School District Assistant Superintendent Dave Jones says that's unlikely with the budget situation. As for the additional building the community wants the district to lease, he says the community didn't clear the additional building with the district. Jones says the district never intended to build up the schools in the Russian villages.
Those were things that at the time were acknowledged wouldn't be able to be out there.
Sunny Hiltz recently retired from the Kenai Peninsula School Board. She represented the three Russian villages on the board. She says she knows the schools in those villages are insufficient.
They are not adequate facilities, and we know that. But it was their intent to keep their culture separate, and this school district supported that. And like I say, we're the only ones in the state that do. And it's expensive. And now we're in a dilemma. We already know we are going to be deficit spending, taking our fund balance and leaving us with almost nothing for emergencies.
The district has requested funding from the state to build a new school in the neighboring village of Kachemak Silo, and that money made it into the governor's initial budget. The issue of whether the district will agree to lease the building in Voznesenka could be decided at the next Kenai Peninsula School Board meeting on January 11th. In Homer, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The founder of an Alaska youth music program has received a major award. As KUAC's Amanda Frank reports, Belle Mickelson has been recognized for traditional music camps that help connect elders and youth in interior villages and beyond.
Belle Mickelson of Cordova is the winner of a $25,000 Purpose Prize. The awards from Encore.org recognize people over 60 for their efforts addressing social injustice, human rights, education, and economic empowerment. Mickelson runs Dancing with the Spirit kids camps that teach Athabascan and fiddling and guitar in rural Alaska.
We usually teach in the elementary school all morning with the different classes and have a little dance for them. And then we teach in the junior high school all afternoon, have a dance for them. Sometimes we have evening jams or work with young adults that want to learn fiddle or guitar.
The camp employs a color-coded system to teach kids how to play guitar or fiddle.
Kids are playing fiddle tunes and guitar songs and enough to have a concert.
Mickelson is often accompanied by Gwich'in elder, fellow musician, and Episcopal priest Trimble Gilbert to help run the week-long camps, which have taught traditional fiddle and guitar music to 2,000 youth across rural Alaska.
The Reverend Trimble Gilbert was one of the people that was in there from the first. Lester Earhart, Walter Newman, Bill Stevens, all those people have been really helpful, and many more.
Since 2006, the Dancing with the Spirit program has traveled to 29 Alaskan villages, as well as Hawaii, a Navajo Indian reservation, Canada's Northwest Territories, and Ontario's Six Nations Reserve. Mickelson is one of six winners of the Purpose Prize. In Fairbanks, I'm Amanda Frank.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
If you're a rural Alaska resident with an interest in preserving subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing for future generations, and maintaining an open forum for public expressions, opinions, and concerns regarding subsistence, consider applying for a seat on the Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council by Friday, January 29, 2016. More information at 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Alaska's Reese Hahnemann raced to first place in the skate technique sprint at the U.S. National Cross Country Ski Championships today in Houghton, Michigan.
Ladies and gentlemen, your overall champion from APU Nordic Ski Center. Let's give it up for Reese Hahnemann.
The Alaska Pacific University team racer from Fairbanks edged Dakota Black Horse Von Jess of Oregon in a six-man sprint final. The sprint competition involves a series of heats around a one-kilometer-plus loop in which the top racers advance. The skate sprint is one of several national championship races being contested this week on trails at Michigan Tech University. The 26-year-old Hahnemann previously won the national sprint title in 2014. Alaskan skiers also did well in the long distance in the longer classics race Sunday. Scott Patterson won the men's 15-kilometer race, and his sister, Caitlin, won the 10-kilometer women's race. Scott skis for APU and Caitlin for the Craftsbury Green Racing Project in Vermont. This is the week. Start making good on your New Year's resolutions. A teacher and kayaking enthusiast in Unalaska recently fulfilled his 2015 resolution. KUCB's Greta Mart has more.
Josh Good made an ambitious New Year's resolution last January to kayak in the waters surrounding Unalaska for at least 30 minutes on 300 days during 2015. That meant dragging his kayak into the chilly waters anywhere from Morris Cove to Nantiquin Bay in all seasons and conditions. Part of his time spent on the water included a summertime kayaking trip around Glacier Bay National Park. Last week, Good made good on his resolution. On December 22nd, his 300th day on the water, he paddled for an hour and 25 minutes in windy conditions from Unalaska Bay to Margaret Bay. Some non-kayaking friends met Good on the Grand Aleutian Hotel beach to cheer his accomplishment. During the year, Good kept a detailed daily log and strapped a GoPro on his kayak to document his efforts. Good says that the most notable change physically from all that kayaking was not buffed out shoulders.
I think the biggest change was my hands, like just holding the paddle all the time. Like the first couple weeks, my hands were really tired.
He says he was inspired to take up his kayaking quest after a friend of his made a similar pledge.
My friend last year had a New Year's resolution to run every day of the year, and he did it. So that's kind of the inspiration for my kayaking every day. Like, I've learned now that you can paddle just about every day, regardless of the weather. Yeah, so I set a goal for 300. I figured that was feasible.
Good is married to a local marine biologist and teaches fifth grade at Unalaska's Eagles View Elementary. He says it was hard simply finding enough time in his busy day to get out on the water before darkness fell. And since this area is called the birthplace of the wind, it was that element that was his most formidable opponent. As long as the front of his kayak was pointed into the wind, it was fine. He could fight a windy blast for the 15 minutes it took to get out to Hog Island, then turn around and surf all the way back.
But the gusts, they come from all the different directions, and it's the worst when they are doing that and they're swirling around. So you'll be bracing, kind of leaning towards into the wind with one shoulder, and then a gust will come from the opposite way, and you're already leaning, and it just doesn't turn out well.
In 300 days, he didn't get dunked once. There was only one incident near Little South America in Captain's Bay when he had to scramble out of his kayak onto some rocks or risk a battering. So now that Good has fulfilled his 2015 resolution, what's up for 2016?
I haven't thought of a good one yet, so we'll see. This is the first New Year's resolution that I've really followed through on, thought about past January 3rd.
Reporting in Unalaska, I'm Greta Mart.
Wayne Price is a Tlingit master carver and artist in Haines who has shaped many totem poles and dugout canoes throughout his life. He recently sat down with his wife, Sherry, for a StoryCorps interview. Price says his own recovery from alcohol addiction led to a focus on artwork that provides healing, including a totem he carved in Whitehorse a few years ago.
I'm taking the art to where we're using monuments to bring awareness. We think of the healing totem we did in Whitehorse. It was 40 feet. And that's the only monument for the awareness of the boarding schools and residential schools in the United States and Canada and Australia. I'm a descendant of boarding school. And my dad went to the Wrangell Institute. And these were not very great places, but we did the healing totem in the Yukon. Said, this is our past, this is what happened to us, it is not a good story, this is the present, he said there's only one race, it's the human race today, and that we're all here now, and we're all being aware of each other, and it has to, if there's going to be a healing in America, and until that happens, then this wound will never heal.
Did you grow up knowing about boarding schools?
My dad talked about it, and there were some good experiences. So, there's some people that went far. Al Kukesh went all the way to Congress and the White House. He's from Angoon, and he said it was a great experience. He got his education, so there were good stories as well. A lot of the issues that are in Indian country now are a direct result from what happened to them through the boarding schools. It'll keep coming back. You know, the suicide rate in Alaska is the highest in all the nation, and majority of that is Native people. There's definitely something going on, and there has to be an awakening, and there has to be an apology. It has to be recognized what really happened instead of not being talked about. It has to be talked about, mm-hmm. and then a healing can occur.
I know growing up in school, I never heard of a residential school or boarding school until I knew you. I grew up as a non-Native person in a non-Native community, and people don't know. I remember asking my mom, because the town we lived in was called Waldwick. Did I ever tell you about that? Waldwick means light in the woods. And I asked her, she said, oh, yes, that was the name of when the Indian people lived here. Waldwick meant light in the woods. And I said, well, where are those Indian people? She's like, I don't know, honey. I don't know. And I wonder if more people did know, it would be a bigger voice to demand that apology. I wish more people did know.
I don't have the answer. I just know that you can sit by the totem and feel something.
Yeah,
I do. You feel it. If you knew nothing about it, you could sit there and you'll still feel something. At the end of the vision in the Sweat Lodge, the Creator told me, he said, when you hear the songs of your ancestors coming across the water, sung by young people, I'm done. And when we did the dugout in the Yukon, and the kids paddled away, singing, I looked at my wife and I said, there it is. I have lived to see my vision complete.
You're a lucky man.
Yeah. Well, no, it's like Joe David said to us. A lot of people have visions, are granted a vision. Not very many of them see it through. I saw it through, and I'll still see it through.
Haynes Master Carver Wayne Price with his wife Sherry Price. The interview was produced by Emily Files with the Juneau Public Libraries and StoryCorps in partnership with Haynesboro Public Library. StoryCorps is a national nonprofit whose mission is to provide Americans of all backgrounds and beliefs with the opportunity to record, share, and preserve the stories of our lives. More information at storycorps.org. And that is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross and Amanda Frank in Fairbanks, Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Josh Edge in Anchorage, Daisha Eaton in Homer, Greta Mart in Unalaska, and Emily Files in Haynes. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web editor, and I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the 2016 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. Alaska Pacific University delivers an affordable education and life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. Graduate with work-ready experience in the career field of your choice. Apply now for fall 2016 and find out more about APU's Promise Tuition Grant and other scholarships at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.